This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Senate Republicans have admitted their latest defeat in overturning the Affordable Care Act. A bill introduced by Senators Bill Cassidy and Lindsey Graham was the third attempt this year by the GOP to try to fulfill their long-standing promise to repeal Obamacare. After Senators Susan Collins, John McCain, and Rand Paul signaled they wouldn't support it, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday announced there would be no vote held. But he also said, quote, "We haven't given up on changing the American healthcare system." The bill died a day after Independent Senator Bernie Sanders and Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar debated Cassidy and Graham on CNN. Sanders defended Obamacare, but also raised his own healthcare bill, a Medicare for All plan that he's introduced into the Senate. What is the future of healthcare reform in the U.S. in the wake of this latest GOP defeat? To answer that question, I'm joined now by Paul Song, a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for a Healthy California. He's also on the board of Physicians for National Health Program and People for the American Way. He's also the healthcare correspondent for this program. Welcome back, Paul.
Great to be back.
So this particular defeat, I suppose, was not terribly surprising given the previous defeats. The GOP has tried time and again to repeal Obamacare. Some have referred to their constant attempts as a zombie that just doesn't die. And this one wasn't even a full repeal. It was a sort of major tweaking of the Obamacare system. The opposition to it came from sort of both sides, right? And I don't know whether that's something we should worry about, that McCain was upset about the process, that it wasn't partisan enough. Susan Collins opposed it because it went too far. So, you know, progressives like Susan Collins. Rand Paul didn't like it because it didn't go far enough. It wasn't cruel enough. Are those three sort of ways of opposition a signal for what to expect next for healthcare?
Well, you know, it's as you said, it's something that seems to be hard to kill. And while the deadline for them to pass under the current Senate laws and rules is going to pass this 30th in just a few days, they can certainly bring this up next year. And you're already hearing talk of that. The problem is, I think that for the Republicans, at least, trying to bring all the factions together on their party on healthcare. It was just impossible, given that they only had a very slim majority. So you had people like Senator McCain that wanted a more thoughtful, bipartisan approach to this with real open hearings. You had people on the far right who just wanted to live up to their promise of repealing the Affordable Care Act and gutting all the taxes that had been raised in order to do this. And then you had moderate Republicans from states that have succeeded and done well under the Affordable Care Act. So it was a really, really difficult situation that Mitch McConnell had trying to put all these factions just in his own party together. What I think is going to emerge from this is you started to have some bipartisan talk before Graham Cassidy popped up, where several senators, mostly moderate senators from both parties, were trying to come together to find common solutions to stabilize the existing insurance market, which was really designed to just make insurance companies feel better and to continue to participate in the exchange. But as far as doing anything dramatic, I don't think that was the intent of this group. From what I've heard, many of them are now planning to come back together to find some solutions to stabilize the existing market.
And so that instability is coming from a few different places, right? On the one hand, you have states that are, and even the federal government, that is deliberately undermining the Affordable Care Act. And all of this politicking, all of these bills that come up and die, is also making insurance companies jittery about projecting their finances, and so they might be raising premiums, which some already have. There's a price we've been paying for this political fighting, haven't we?
Absolutely. So in the state of California, you've had Anthem just announced that they were going to raise rates 35%.
35%! That's by a third. That's insane.
It really is. And remember, one of the things that the Affordable Care Act failed to do because of the influence of the insurance industry was to prevent any insurance rate regulation to be written into the actual bill. And that's why you continue to have skyrocketing premiums. That is a big problem. So a lot of the insurers have justified increasing rates because of the uncertainty, or they've pulled out altogether, which has further eliminated choice in areas and competition. So yes, the Republicans, while they have not been able to repeal the Affordable Care Act, they've done a lot of things to undermine it. They did away with the sort of financial guarantee subsidies that were given to insurance companies to stay in the exchange. What that meant was in the first few years of the exchange, insurance companies were guaranteed a minimum amount of money in addition to the premiums that they collected, because no one was sure how this was going to work. And after several years, that subsidy dried up, and a lot of the insurers did not want to take the chance of losing additional money. Some were losing money, and so as a result, they decided to pull out. And that ultimately, as you say, is punishing people that have to get their health care on the exchange.
Now, Republicans, including Donald Trump, have complained about rising premiums, blaming Obamacare. But I don't know if they've ever suggested or included in any of the repeal bills regulating the cost of premiums and actually capping premium costs, right?
Yes. So that's something that I think both parties, both Republicans and Democrats, have continued to protect the insurance industry by failing to advance any insurance rate regulation legislation. And that's something, again, that we're all paying for.
Now, let's go to what the future of any repeal effort might be. The Republicans are pivoting to tax reform, but they have said their healthcare repeal efforts are not over. However, as you said, past the September 30th deadline, any Senate effort to overturn Obamacare is going to have to come with a majority vote, a supermajority, rather than a simple majority vote. So they can't count on their numbers in the Senate lining up. They're going to need Democratic support if they have any hope of overturning Obamacare. And if we've been able to count on the Democrats for one thing, it's this year, it's been holding the line on Obamacare.
And what people need to realize is that we have an electorate that is finally waking up and demanding much more. The overall approval rating for the Graham-Cassidy bill was 20%, the latest poll, which is unheard of, right? That they would still try to advance something. Meanwhile, the support for Medicare for All continues to grow, and you have the latest Harvard-Harris poll, which showed a majority of Americans were in favor of that. So what's happening is more and more people are waking up and realizing that they can't afford their copays, they can't afford their deductibles, they're delaying seeking care, they can't afford their monthly premiums, or they can't afford paying for medication. And these are the people that called in record numbers, not because they were necessarily happy with the Affordable Care Act, but they realized that what the GOP was proposing would be even more detrimental and one step even further worse than that. So what's happened is that I think that this group of people had put tremendous amount of pressure on their elected officials from the Democrats as well as the Republicans. So I will say, in talking to staffers on Capitol Hill, that the response that they got, both from the Democrat and Republican senator staff, as well as from their electorate, was pretty bilateral, bipartisan in support against the bill. So I think, you know, while the Democratic legislators share some credit for standing firm, it was really, I would say, the electorate that woke up and really had an unprecedented groundswell against this.
And Senator Sanders, it should be said, he continues to be the most popular politician in the country, putting forward the most popular type of healthcare plan in the country. And you see neither of the major parties getting enough support or backing him on that bill in big enough numbers. Some prominent Democrats have joined him, but not nearly enough if you're looking at real numbers to pass this bill, not so far at least. So what is the future as far as you can tell? I know we don't have a crystal ball, but we have Sanders' bill in the Senate. Will the Republicans try to put forward yet another bill, or are they just hoping their base kind of forgets about the fact that they have failed at least three times this year? And of course, if you count the last 8 years, even more times.
So I think that's a really good question. And I think what's going to happen is I think they will continue to pay lip service that they're going to try to overturn or repeal the Affordable Care Act. Part of that is they're beholden to the Koch brothers who have basically demanded that they continue to do this, or they will cut off all funding for them. So that's something that they'll outwardly continue to do. But I think the more sort of sinister stealth things that they're going to plan to do is start to take a stab at privatizing Medicare, at greatly reducing Medicaid to a block grant independent of the Affordable Care Act. And these are ways that they can, again, start to implement their less government, more private solution strategy. Now, granted, these will take 60 votes, but I think that's ultimately where things will be heading. As far as healthcare. Now, one thing I just want to say about the Senator Sanders bill, I did hear some criticism that it was, selfish and unfortunate for him to bring up this bill when everyone was fighting the GOP repeal. And as you mentioned, I think Senator Sanders was out there fighting against repeal as much as anyone, perhaps even more than anyone. At the same time, I don't think you can't do both, right? You can continue to fight and protect the Affordable Care Act, like many healthcare activists I know did, while still continuing to aspire for something greater and to push for something greater. And I think that what's different, as you mentioned, when Senator Sanders introduced his single-payer legislation in 2013, he couldn't find any co-sponsors in the Senate. And this year he found, including himself, 17 senators have co-sponsored this legislation. Conversely, in the House, John Conyers has introduced his single-payer H.R. 676 bill since 2003. And for the first time, he has over 120 total people signing onto this bill. Now, what's changing? This is something that used to be considered a political taboo where, God forbid, any legislator even publicly espouse support for Medicare for All. But now not only are they espousing support for it, they co-sponsored it. Their names are on it. So what are they realizing? That the electorate is now more and more in favor of this, and more people are demanding this. And this is actually not a taboo subject, but rather something that needs to be embraced. And the only other area that I see a similar sort of very fast, rapid transformation of both elected officials as well as the general population is marriage equality. Think of where it was several years ago, and just in a matter of 4 or 5 years, it has now become law of the land. I think that the fact that you now have so many senators, granted it's not a majority, but you have, that's a sizable, to go from zero to 16 co-sponsors in 3 years is really unheard of. And
right, these aren't supporters, they're co-sponsors.
Exactly.
So presumably there'll be more people that'll even vote for it.
They've done the math and they realize that if they run for something, having been a co-sponsor, they've done the math and they realize this is no longer detrimental for them. If anything, this is where society is moving. Very much like where society was moving along with marriage equality, I believe society is moving towards Medicare for All. And that's only because more and more people are harmed each day by our current healthcare system. And they're waking up and realizing, no, I'm not going to believe the lies. We need this. So that's what's really interesting and changing. And I think that people and politicians who dismiss this as a pipe dream or as a movement that will soon, pitter out, are greatly underestimating what's changed right now. People are tired of, again, paying for premiums or struggling to pay for premiums versus rent. 45 million Americans last year could not afford to fill their prescriptions. So these are people that are realizing collectively, when you look at all the people that are harmed by insurance premiums, drug costs, denials, co-pays, deductibles, if all those people come together and demand something greater, that's a massive group of people that have been, you know, sort of controlled and lied to for a long period of time, and that's what's changed.
What about Trump, who is, of course, quite upset about the loss of the Graham Cassidy bill as well? One of the things that he said right away was, well, we should just change the rules. Let's get rid of the filibuster rules, because after Friday, we're going to need 60 votes. Could he get his wish?
Well, again, the Senate has done that with regard to judicial appointments.
So they could look at
our last Supreme Court justice. And certainly it is a contentious time in the Senate, and this, you know, there's always the fear of that. I mean, none of us ever suspected that the nuclear option would have been invoked for Supreme Court justices, but it indeed was. So I would not put anything past this Senate, and I would not put anything past this president. And that's why, again, people need to continue putting the pressure on the senators, because remember, they didn't even have 50 votes. So even if a filibuster wasn't there, they didn't have the votes to pass.
Exactly right. So if they don't have 50 votes now, they may not have 50 votes if they do get rid of the filibuster. Well, we shall see how things play out in the next few months. Paul, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always great to be here.
My guest is Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California. He's on the board of Physicians for National Health Program and People for the American Way, and also the healthcare correspondent for our program. We've been discussing the end of the latest GOP Obamacare repeal effort. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.